Why Make Music, the podcast hosted by yours truly, Think Tim. That's THINKTIMM. Think Tim. Welcome to Why Make Music. This is episode number 10. This is really cool because I want to thank everyone for listening, everyone for finding us, everyone for tuning in. I am greatly, greatly humbled and very excited to go into a new podcast today. Today we're going to be talking about why, what is sync licensing? That's something very important to me because that's my goal. That is something I am striving for. But before we get into it, let me reintroduce myself to you as I do each and every episode. I'm Think Tim. I am an independent musician, producer, creative, a thinker. I don't do this for any financial revenue. I am not signed to any major label. I pay for a distribution deal with United Masters to get my music on streaming platforms so it can be shared with everyone, anyone, everywhere. My goal is to put out as much music as possible, instrumentals, and eventually I'll probably move into some vocal tracks. But right now, I am very much so focused on our topic for the day, which is why and what is sync licensing. But before we get into that, let's segue back into the time machine and go back a little bit, and I will tell you an interesting story about how I got started and something that brings us to the name of the podcast, which is Why Make Music. Once again, I will explain to you the reason why the title is Why Make Music is because I believe that that is a question that could be asked of any creative person at any given time that should spawn conversation, because it is something that every creative person thinks about all the time and would love to talk about. So my thing is, why make music? What was the important jump off in my life that led me to the point that I wanted to be creative? I wanted to share my sound with everyone. So, growing up, I tell you, I had a very strong musical influence, and I strived to be as creative and put out as much stuff as I could. I always really wanted to just be kind of in the background and kind of putting my hands in and finishing touches on what was going around. At one point, I had the opportunity to work as a manager for a up-and-coming older throwback. A lot of adjectives, a lot of superlatives in that rock group that specialized in sounds that were similar to the late 60s, early 70s. It was a three-piece band, guitar player, bass player, and drummer. And they kind of likened themselves to the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And boy, were these guys on fire. They were so good that I had to basically steal the guitar player from my own. I'm like, I'm telling you, the dude was like fire. A little later, maybe another podcast, I'll go into some live tracks and I will throw him out there to burn this podcast to the ground. Anywho, but in my experiences, we did talent shows with them. I shared the bill with his band, him being in my band, and another band that was a hip-hop band, strictly, which another producer friend of mine had. He was doing the tracks, and he had a rapper with him. But we had good times. So the thing is, what I'm trying to get at is just explaining my background and realizing that you as listeners need to hear about me in order for you to share about yourself. So once again, I will say, comments and the comment section, hit me up on social media, do what you have to do, get in contact, don't be shy. This is about all of us, this is about music, this is about creativity, this is about building a community that we can bounce ideas off of each other and we can learn from each other. So, without further ado, let's get into the topic of today. Today I am talking to you about something that's very important to me, which is sync licensing. If you don't know what sync licensing is, it's basically every bit of music that you hear in the background of commercials, television, movies, any media that you're listening to, if you listen to podcasts and the person is using music, they have to get permission from the writer, the producer, so forth and so on, in order to use it. Unlike that, I myself, I'm responsible for all the sounds that you hear in the background. I put together all the music is mine, so there is no one to pay other than attention to myself. So let's begin by defining what sync licensing is. To provide like a comprehensive explanation of sync license, it refers to the practice of pairing music with video, with visual media, including films, television shows, commercial, and online content. Sync licensing plays a very important broader role in the music industry, emphasizing on the potential to generate revenue and exposure for artists. I think that's more so why I like it, because how many times have you been watching TV or you hear a commercial and there's a song, a catchy song, it's not a popular song, it's not a song that you hear on the radio, but it could be, or you're watching a TV show and there's a song that kind of sounds like what's going on in music right now or what was going on in the past, but it's not made by a major artist. I'm like, if you were to use one of the features on your smart device and you were to look the song up, you'll come across a name that you never heard of, and then you realize, like, oh wow, this sounds just like it could be a major artist, but it's not. So these things are what goes into the whole category, the whole sub-life world of sync licensing. The reason why you have this music is because all art forms should be compensated, money paid to the creator who made it. So imagine if they did a commercial and every commercial contained music from the top popular artists and you had to pay royalties or production credit to these people. The shows, the movie theaters, the movie producers, the movie makers, the commercial makers would technically go broke because they would have to pay this large sum of money out for these big artists. So what they do to circumvent that is that they basically find music that sounds similar to this and they insert that and they pay what could be a good amount of money to a average creator as opposed to large six figures. You might get 1500, you might get 2,000, 3,000, you might look up, get 20,000 for a placement, which if you are living your life as the average person, that's a nice little piece of change for a song that you're turning over that you are still keeping credit for. It's a situation where it's a non-exclusive deal that as the writer, producer, you still own the song. You're not selling the song. The song is just getting played. And while it's getting played, people may, like I said, use that smart device, look you up, and then you will gain some type of notoriety, a little bit more popularity, and a little bit more airplay or streaming, so forth or so on. Or better yet, it may open other doors for other commercial placements, and this will be your introduction into a, I guess, a subcategory of advertising, because like I tell you before, all the time, every week, that basically a lot of music is taken for granted because it's in the background. And even though it's in the background, just like if you are watching the news or you are watching a scene in a movie, this is something that is professionally produced and professionally put together. And these people, we artists, have to get paid by it. So, this is like saying, for example, when you go to the movie theater, and if you are a Marvel fan, we have been conditioned to sit through the credits to wait for that extra bonus scene, and you see all the credits rolling up there, and you get to the music section, and there are songs written, produced, arranged by artists that have to be given credit. There are organizations such as BMI, ASCAP, that keep track of what's being played, because all the songs are professionally registered to these organizations. So this way, as a creative person, you will get credit. So the thing is that no work should go unpaid. You know, like, everyone puts in a day's work and they should receive a day's pay for what they did. So the reason why I got interested in the whole sync licensing scenario was basically, I guess, more or less a means to an end. Every week or so, I flash back to the earlier episode where I gave a bunch of stats about how much music is being put out on a daily basis. The astounding number was something unbelievable, like 120,000 songs a day are being released because there are that many creative people. And nowadays, since we have the technology that we have the ability to upload music constantly onto the streaming platforms and get our music heard. So with that, that lessens the chances that as an independent artist, without the backing of a strong marketing team, as an independent artist who's recording from their home and not necessarily trying to put a band together or go out and perform or gig for a living, you have to find other avenues to basically create a revenue stream. Now, am I successful in this? I told you before, I am currently making zero doing this, other than pennies from streaming and pennies from YouTube. I have not struck a deal to do anything. My main concern is A, continuing to educate myself, to continue to put out good ideas, quality music that will hopefully stimulate someone or influence someone or possibly get the attention of a sync agent or a music supervisor. Those are the two important roles when it comes to this whole entire sync licensing thing. I think we need to understand their roles and their responsibilities when it comes to this. To provide like a in-depth overview of the responsibility of a sync agent, they are basically the ones who are the intermediate between the artists and the potential licensing opportunities. So they're like the brokers, the agents, the go-between, the guy in the middle or the girl in the middle, more or less, that they compile what they call music libraries, sync libraries, and they shop them to their clients that are in advertising commercials, and they try to further the connection, the deals. They basically are that they do the legwork. They get out there, because the thing is that shockingly, as everything that we realize, the music industry is very, very small. So think about it. If you were a TV company, a commercial, an advertising firm, you would tend to want to deal with the same handful of people constantly, and you would assume that whatever makes your life easier is dealing with as few people as possible. So therefore, once you find someone that's reliable, you go to that person, and hopefully that person will always have somebody on deck, and then that's how the connect is made. Then you have music supers. So if you have ever read the credits in a back in the credits of the TV show or a movie, or if you go on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, these are jobs. These are people who have jobs, and their job is to seek out and find and collect music. And they will be responsible for a show, a movie, a commercial, advertising situation, and they will find the proper music to put in there. So these are the folks that, as a independent artist, as an independent music producer, you try to get in touch with, you try to connect with. So this way, you can then, hopefully, they can hear your material, and then they can consider using your material for a project that they're working on. Now, with that being said, you think like, okay, is that something that's marketable? Is that something that's feasible in the grand scheme of things? Me personally, I think that it is just as much of a chance to get your music heard that way as it is to get your music played or picked up by a major artist or a major label and hoping for distribution. Also, I think it's something, depending on what your goals are, what your personal goals are. Like I said, mine is minimal. I am already older. I am not trying to headline a music festival. I'm not trying to leave my house. I'm not trying to do any type of interviews. I'm not trying to do any performances. I am a person who has been a musician my entire life, or a creative person my entire life, that has only done this as a hobby. And I do believe that it's good enough to be competitive with everyone, because currently we are all playing in the same sandbox with the same shovel and the same bucket, thanks to technology being what it is nowadays. So, the funny thing is, so when you research this and you look it up and it tells you, like, say for example, if you were to possibly get your material synced for commercial use, they say the average payment could be $2,000 to $50,000 per placement, which is crazy because you got to think about it. What's the average length of a commercial? 40 seconds or so, and the music's not playing the whole 40 seconds. So the placement can significantly vary depending on the brand, the reach of the commercial, the prominence of the song, and the prominence of the product. We all have these commercial jingles that are stuck in our head, or we recognize music from certain products as being almost like common second nature. But someone puts together, someone creates this music, and someone picks and decides to use it. And these are the sync agents and the music supervisors that I was speaking of. National commercials can generally pay higher fees based upon local and their regional spots. High profile campaigns, especially if you have like a well-known song, can actually generate fees that exceed $100,000. So this is just commercials. So this segues into my thought pattern when I first realized that this was a thing, was that the first distribution product I put out, which was this basic thing called Demotional. It was a nine-song EP. Now, nine songs, it's not nothing to sneeze at, but I realized the reason why I put out nine songs was that I wanted to basically test the waters of the distribution system that I had signed up for. So when I realized that the nine songs I had only basically allowed me to be eligible for, I guess, if they were to shop or look at, or if someone were to say, so for example, let's get a little further deeper into that. United Masters basically said that they had connections with ESPN and with, I guess, Xbox, Y2K, and other marketable plans. And they could then put your songs in consideration for these products and these placements. So, think about it. If you have nine songs, you only had the consideration nine times to be considered for a placement. So, since I have no problem creating music, I came up with the fact that, okay, so what if I have more than nine songs? That increases my chances. So the follow-up to the nine-song EP was Demotional, Caught Feelings, which contained 26 tracks. Now, since I am not trying to necessarily get airplay, I tease and I joke all the time saying I'm trying to oversaturate the market. I put that out in September, or was it August? It's October now, so it had to be August. So in August, I put out the 26 tracks of Demotional, Caught Feelings. At that point, I started emailing only one time, because you do not want to harass or seem like you're crazy. A very professional, well put together letter introducing my stuff and my music and my background, and the one key phrase that I think is very important when it comes to dealing with sync agents and music supervisors is that I am a one-stop situation, meaning I don't use samples in my songs, so there is no clearance that you have to go through when selecting something that I've done. I am the only writer. I am the only producer. I am the one person that if you were to contact me right now and say, oh, I would like to use this track. Send me something to sign and it's a done deal and you don't have to worry about nothing else being done. All the ideas are one location, one person. It's easy to deal with as opposed to having to worry about clearing samples and talking to several people and trying to get a deal done as opposed to just shooting, hey, I like what you did. Let's work, paperwork, exchanged, whatever, however it goes. Like I said, I haven't got to that point yet, but I think that it's more desirable to have just a one-stop situation on deck. So with that in mind, like I sat back and said, oh, well, what's better than 9 songs being considered? It would be 26 songs to be considered. That was August. So then in September, I dropped the number, another 26 songs for distribution, because once they're out for distribution, all the publishing situations are taken care of with BMI. So therefore, all the paperwork is in order that, oh, that I think, Tim, I'm the sole person doing this, and these tracks are taken care of and they're registered already. So then in August, that was 26. In September, that's 26. So that was 26, 26, 52. Then you flip it now. Tomorrow, which is Saturday, but today is Friday, and I'm actually recording this a day early, so in all reality, today's Thursday, and tomorrow's Friday, I am dropping a third installment of another 26 songs, and that will be a total of 76 songs out in 3 months, which will hopefully be able to be circulated within communities that are interested in sync placement, sync licensing, and maybe something could pop or jump or move. With that, I want to continue with this crazy thing of, you want to know what my motivation is. So we talked about commercial usage, and if you go to television, the average payment for using your song in the television show could be $1,500 to $25,000 per episode. So this payment can differ based upon the show's budget, whether it's on a network, cable, streaming platform. For example, if a song is used like on a high-profile series like those on HBO or Netflix, you might attract a higher fee compared to smaller network shows. Background music typically pays less than the theme song, but it's still money, and it's still, your music is still being heard. Ideally, I think this is something that you have to think about, because think about it. We all listen to music. We all listen to streaming. We all realize that, oh, these entertainers, these producers who are making our top 20, top 200 songs, we see that they are benefiting financially from the music. The music industry may be somewhat in shambles when it comes to the structure of a record company, but publishing paperwork, that has always been the backbone. Think about the question of who owns the masters of the recordings and who's getting paid. I told you before that most of the time, the artist, if you are not the producer and you are not the songwriter, if you are a face for a song, you may not be collecting that bag. You may not be getting that money. You may be a person on payroll that basically gets a small portion of the pie because you are not the one creating the music or creating anything. You might get the shine, you might get the spotlight, and you might have all the talent in the world as far as a voice and dancing and doing whatever. But unless you own what you're doing, you are not getting the full benefits of being creative. So I realize that, and I try my best if ever I speak to anyone who's interested in music or anyone who is talented, I highly encourage them to attempt to get on the creative side along with being the face of whatever you're doing. Because if you want to create money for the future to help you and your family do better, you need to be on top of that paperwork and you need to be on top of that money. Because right now, let me tell you, everybody can make music. And when it pops off, people who buy music, people who invest their money in music, that's like a disposable income. That's not something that is factored in, but at the same point, you know that the music industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. I saw this crazy ad on one of my timelines on the social media thing, and they were talking about this thing called black box money. It sounds crazy, but basically what they were talking about was the money that basically doesn't get paid out to anyone because people's paperwork isn't in order. But publishing companies must put this money aside because it's a business. And then at year's end, the money is then redistributed back into the larger record companies or the larger people, the largest business organizations when it comes to music. And that's because sometimes people aren't getting all their cash. Only because sometimes you have a hit and you don't want to, or you have an idea, you have a song, you put it out, but you don't take care of the publishing, you don't take care of the ownership part of it. And somewhere in the world, this thing is generating money, and everything, like I said, everything is a business. Everyone must be taken care of. So therefore, if you don't handle your business, you're missing out on money. And if there's a way that I could have money to contribute to household expenses, college tuitions, vacations on mental, intellectual property, music that I'm creating regardless, that's a win-win for me and my family. I'm like, and if there's a way that this could, money can become long invested money that could take care of my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren down the line, money is money, man. You need to take care of your business. So as we continue to talk about this sync placement, let's move on to like movies. And they say that the average payment for movies for background music can be anywhere from $5,000 to $50,000 for background music, and then you can have anything from $10,000 to $250,000 for a feature placement. That meaning that the context of music that's played a significant role in determining the payment featured for a song during like a key moment of a scene. Think about it. How much do you think that John Carpenter, who put together the Halloween franchise and wrote the original Halloween and his music in the background, how much money do you think that that song has generated, has earned him throughout his time of creating that movie in, what, 1978, 79? And you have songs, no lyrics, nothing, just a melody and some little piano stabs here and there, and it's engraved in our memories forever, you know? So it's something to think about for all of you independent do-it-yourself musicians out there. But I do urge you, do your homework and be professional and be polite when contacting these folks. From what I read and what I'm reading and what I understand is that, just like anyone else, if you send a proper, polite, professional correspondence, they may consider looking at your... So when they look at your material, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to call you and tell you that, hey, I heard your song. No. Time may go by and you may hear back from them, but just make sure you have all your stuff in order so when that happens, you can benefit from it. I'm like, because if not, they'll just move on to the next situation. You know, no one is here to coddle you or baby you or walk you through this. I wish I had more helpful hints and much more helpful tips of how to get it done. But like, listen, I am learning as I go along. I joined a few groups on Reddit that had a few cool groups about sync licensing, and one of the greatest pieces of advice that the person gave was basically, do your homework, do the legwork. I cannot give you a list of contacts, but I can tell you how I got the list of contacts was that I read, I took my time, I went to websites, I went to IMDb, I looked up music supervisors, I looked up sync agents, and I reached out and I formed a correspondence. I sent something out, I asked them if they would consider it, if they could consider my music or my submission. And then eventually, I'm assuming that they will get back to you. I'm like, you have to understand, everybody's a person. Not everybody in the world is a crazy asshole. You know, that the man things right away, you know. So it's like, if your job, think about what you do for a living. If certain things came across your desk and you took your time to listen and something caught your ear, and you could, hey, I'm going to make a mental note, next time I'm doing such and such, or next time I'm looking for material, I'm going to revisit this situation. This person contacted me, and the day of sending DVDs, cassettes are gone. So you send your link, you send a track, I send the link since I'm on streaming platforms and they can go and look at it. Like I said, all my stuff is registered through BMI, and if the time comes, I'm ready. And like I said, as of tomorrow, October 25th, there will be 78 songs available. In November, around the third, fourth week of November, I'll drop another 26. In December, I'll drop another 26. I'm not trying to sit back and get airplay. I'm telling you not, I am not trying to get airplay. Like, that streaming does not necessarily pay. I'm like, in order to get $3,500, you have to be streamed a million times. I don't think that's going to happen. But if I could get someone to be interested in a song or instrumental, and that could put it into a commercial, and the commercial could then get me $1,500 for 15 seconds, or if I could get my song on a TV show and that could get me anything. Money's money, man. Work at it. Think about it. Do what you have to do. Make sure you learn about metadata, which is basically all the information that goes into the component of the song that you're giving. Inside your music programs, there's comment fields. Inside that comment field, you should put your name, your contact information, the BPMs of the song, the key that the song is in, the what the song could possibly be compared to. Put all this information in there. Make sure you put in there that, oh, you are the sole owner. You are the one-stop shopping place for this track. This will help speed things along because people need to be reminded. You got to think, when you're doing something for a living, you don't remember every little detail about a situation. So if someone could have all this stuff for you, if you could sit back and say, hey, that thing Tim do, every time I go and I look at his streaming platform and he has some okay music, once a month, this dude is putting up another 26 tracks. Instrumental tracks, no samples. It could sound okay in the background or something. Let me give this dude a play. Let me see if, oh, this will work. All it takes is one. All it takes is one great idea. One great connection in order to build a bridge behind you to get you to the next location. During my research of trying to get things together, I had a list of 20 songs that gained popularity after being featured in commercials or TV shows or movies or soundtracks. These tracks became synonymous with the media that they were used for, leading them into broader recognition and commercial success. Now, some of these songs, of course, we heard because I'm looking at the list here and I'm trying to think, like, who hasn't heard Whitney Houston, I Always Love You from the Bodyguard soundtrack, or Happy from Pharrell for Despicable Me Too. But these were made for movies, or they were picked up, so you know Dolly Parton got the bank for I Always Love You because that was a Dolly Parton song before it was a Whitney Houston song. And then they even had Take On Me by A-ha that came out like in the 80s, and they said that became popular again in commercials and TV shows and was used recently in Stranger Things. And then it's like somebody that I used to know was used in the TV shows and commercials. All Star by Smash Mouth was used in Shrek, which blew that up. Uptown Funk, produced by Mark Rosden, featuring Bruno Mars, was used. That was like all over the place. I'm like, I've heard different versions of that. Dreams by Fleetwood Mac. I think that's the joint where the guy be skating on a skateboard. Maybe, is that the one? I don't know. But there's so many songs that have been out there. I Still Feel by Portugal of the Man. Oh, wow. Gained traction after being featured in commercials and TV shows. They even have Royals by Lorde. That was a cool song. And they said that was featured in various commercials. But I think I heard that song before I saw it in the commercials. What's another good one? That Budapest song by George Ezra, featured in commercials. This Is How We Do, Montel Jordan. Now that song came out in the 90s, so for that song to still be around killing it, it's great. Ocean Eyes by Billie Eilish featured in media commercials. The storyline behind that song is so crazy. If ever you get a chance, go online and look up her brother Phineas, who wrote the song. He actually said he wrote the song for his band first, and they performed it several times. And this is not a famous band. This was a fan band before the song came out, and then eventually he just had his younger sister, who was 15 at the time, sing vocals on the song and put it on YouTube, and next thing you know, the song took off and had a life of its own. And salute to you guys. Home recorder, independent producer, recording on Logic at home, and they record in a very fun, unconditional way of getting vocals done, you know, and they're killing it. I like their stuff. There were some songs that I had never heard before, or people I never heard of. So, like, if you go online, you look this stuff up, you'll be shocked to find out that a lot of the songs that kind of got the earworm on in your head was basically based upon some commercial songs that were used, and all of a sudden they got stuck in you. I ain't gonna lie to you. Come on. I'm jamming to the Sky Rizzy song. I'm like, there's like 4 or 5 different versions, an R&B version, a hip-hop version, a country version, a pop version of it. There's tons of cool music out there. Either between them redoing a song and redoing it to make the song popular again, or taking songs that you never heard before. If I'm not mistaken, I think they said that even though I've been aware of Lizzo for a long time, almost close to 10 years now, but I think she had a song for Grubhub that basically took one of her newer songs and made it popular, that they end up releasing a single, and then a single did well. And obviously, if I say Lizzo, you know who Lizzo is. And there's tons of songs that get played in commercials that don't necessarily, that weren't meant to be hits. But when I was a kid, there used to be that ketchup commercial for Heinz, and it was the anticipation song. Now, I know the song existed prior to the ketchup commercial, but I'm aware of the song because of the little kid trying to pour the ketchup out, and then the song coming on in the background saying anticipation. So there's tons of things that we take for granted that you have to realize, and I say this all the time. Every form of media that we consume is a business. Someone is making a choice, a decision to put it out there. When you're on social media, a person is making a decision to post this video, to put this music in the background, to do it. There's cool little editing tools that you can play with and that you can put your stuff out there on. The distribution company that I'm dealing with allows me to bring my music onto these social platforms. If you look up Think Tim on your Instagram, your Twitter, or your TikTok or Facebook, it allows you to put my music over top of your stuff. It's crazy. I'm like, it's wonderful. I'm like, this is how you go when you attempt to reach the masses and you try to do your best and you put your stuff out there. This is a lesson that I'm trying to share with all independent people, all independent musicians out there, realize there are so many avenues for you to travel down to get your music heard, to somehow figure out a way to generate income, to generate revenue, to live your life off of intellectual property. There's nothing greater than knowing that you created something and it is allowing you to live your life to the fullest, and you could be happy. You could supply for yourself, you could supply life for your kids, your family. You could do a lot of things, and let me tell you, it's nothing like creating. It's a cool feeling. I'm like, if you sit back and you think, ask yourself, I ask myself all the time, how amazing is it that I can sit back and listen to my own music? That I don't have to, if I don't want to. I love music too much, so I listen to other people's stuff too. But you understand, or just the simple fact that someone might like my stuff as much as I like someone else's stuff. It's a great feeling to have, and as a creative person, you have to take into account the fact that it can't be taken away from you. You create something, you create music, you create art, you create a book, you write a story. This is something that will be with you, that you could pass on to your children, their children, that could be around, that can influence a generation after you. Even this podcast, I told you all the time, I'm astounded by the listeners, I'm astounded by the numbers, and that people are listening to me, and I'm no better than you are. I'm like, I'm the same. I am a person with an idea. I am just looking for my opportunity to live my life, get old, enjoy my family, enjoy the things around me, enjoy the world, and continue to make music. Once again, I want to thank you all for tuning in. I am Think Tim, and this is why I make music. I make music because music is a lesson. Music is a part of my life. Music is a part of everything I do. That's why I make music. As an independent, as a do-it-yourself producer, a creative, if you are a professional hummer, if you are a person that sings in the shower, if you are someone who likes to write lyrics, that likes to rap, if you rap in the car, you sing. Listen, if you are a country music lover, a pop lover, a R&B jazz lover, you make music. Share it with the world. Your phone has a music app on it. You can download anything for free. If you have an Apple computer, GarageBand comes standard. You can make it. Most of these programs cost under $200-$300, and they're updated for the whole entire time that you have them. Don't be shy, make it. I know kids are learning how to do music production in school. I'm not saying everybody's going to be the next great producer, but it helps them become well-rounded. You know, you need to be in touch with what you're doing. You need to know that, oh, the people that you like, the people that you are listening to, all they did was they did it. They're no different. What does Nike say? Just do it. Try it. We're not talking about skydiving. We're not talking about skiing. We're talking about sitting in front of that same computer, sitting on that same phone that you have in your hand all the time, and be creative. Put your ideas down, put those ideas out, share them with the world. My name is Think Tim. That's THITIMM. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And hit me up. Ask me, why make music? I might have a story to tell you. I know I got a story to tell you. Peace. Live your life. Be wild. Think Tim, if nothing else.